Today is Tuesday, the 22nd of July, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Six months of the Trump administration, the stench of fascism and political crisis. Patrick Martin, July the 21st, 2025. The Trump administration reached its six-month mark Sunday with the usual boasting from the White House about its unrivaled success and equally bankrupt assessments in the corporate media, portraying Trump as a titan who has remade American political life. The truth is that this is a government characterized by dictatorial methods, militarist provocations, and deep unpopularity. It is plunging into a political crisis that could well trigger its collapse. The eruption of the scandal over the deliberate cover-up of Trump's connections to billionaire speculator and convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, 6 years after Epstein's supposed suicide in a Manhattan prison cell, is not a passing matter. It rather resembles such scandals of the 20th century as the Stavisky Affair, 1933-34 in France, and the Perfumo Affair, 1963 in Britain, which upended governments and brought about major shifts in the political life of each country. It is worth reviewing these historical experiences, always understanding that these were not matters of individual misconduct, whether sexual or financial, but revealed the deep-going corruption of an entire ruling class, leading to the discrediting of the entire bourgeois political order in France and the collapse of the Tory government in Britain. The Epstein scandal has even more far-reaching implications, since it is exposing the criminality of the ruling class in the United States, the centre of world capitalism. The Stavisky Affair took place as France staggered under the impact of the Great Depression and the coming to power of Hitler in Germany in 1933. Stavisky was a Russian Jew raised in France who devised a method of financial swindling involving the issuing of worthless municipal bonds based on fraudulent collateral, including fake jewellery. When his scheme began to be exposed, many officials of the Radical Socialist Party, the bourgeois party then in power in France, were implicated. But through rampant bribery and legal manipulation, Stavisky succeeded in postponing his trial for fraud 19 times over 6 years, amid growing public outrage. In January 1934, he was found dead of a gunshot wound, and his death ruled, a la Epstein, a suicide. Eyebrows were raised when some Paris newspapers pointed out that the bullet was fired from a distance that seemed to preclude a self-inflicted wound. Only a month later, whipped up by anti-Semitic agitation over the Stavisky Affair, a gang of fascists attacked the French Parliament and had to be driven off by police gunfire. The French Prime Minister resigned and a right-wing coalition came to power, a change of government which foreshadowed the ignominious collapse of France in the face of the Nazi invasion in June 1940. Leon Trotsky wrote of the attempted fascist coup, "The French people for a long time thought that fascism had nothing whatsoever to do with them. They had a republic in which all questions were dealt with by the sovereign people through the exercise of universal suffrage. But on February the 6th, 1934, several thousand fascists and royalists, armed with revolvers, clubs and razors, imposed upon the country the reactionary government of Domergue, under whose protection the fascist bands continue to grow and arm themselves." With of France, page 3. The Perfumo Affair, 30 years later, involved the intersection of a sex scandal and Cold War politics. John Perfumo, a Tory MP, held the post of Secretary of State for War, the equivalent of Defence Minister, the top civilian official overseeing the army. He formed a relationship with model and call girl Christine Keeler, who was introduced to him by high society osteopath Stephen Ward, acting as her pimp. Ward had Winston Churchill and J. Paul Getty among his patients, as well as numerous royals. Keeler was at the same time the lover of Yevgeny Ivanov, a naval attaché at the Soviet embassy in London. When the first rumours of the affair emerged in March 1963, Perfumo denied it in a speech to Parliament and was supported by Tory party leadership, including Prime Minister Harold Macmillan. 3 months later, Profumo was compelled to admit his relationship with Keeler and resign his position as Defence Minister for lying to Parliament and potentially compromising British military security. The British Trotskyists, then organised as the Socialist Labour League, took the Profumo affair with utmost seriousness. SLL leader Gerry Healy penned a front-page comment in the party newspaper, The Newsletter, on Profumo's resignation under the headline, quote, "Lies and Corruption, the Truth About Toryism." He wrote, "Through all these shattering events, more and more evidence is brought to light which proves conclusively that the ruling class and the criminal underworld rub shoulders in the same circles." Labour leaders such as Harold Wilson tell us that the Profumo scandal is not a moral question. "This is the language of humbugs and hypocrites. It is a moral question, a question of class morality." The Profumo affair shattered the credibility of Prime Minister Macmillan, and he stepped down by the end of the year, giving way to a caretaker regime which was replaced by the Labour Party in the 1964 election, ending 30 years of Tory rule. Stephen Ward put on trial for his central role in the affair all too conveniently and, like Epstein, allegedly killed himself before a verdict could be rendered and before he could name any further names. The Epstein scandal in the United States combines many of the same malign elements: sexual exploitation, financial manipulation, suicide under suspicious circumstances, the murky role of the police and intelligence agencies. The corruption is on an American scale, that is, almost incomprehensible in its size. The FBI has reportedly identified more than 1,000 young girls who were the victims of Epstein's sex trafficking, a staggering number. Equally staggering, however, is the number of wealthy and powerful men, scions of the ruling oligarchy, who have been held accountable. Zero. Whether there is a, quote, client list to be made public cannot yet be determined, but Epstein certainly had some means of contacting his customers and patrons and ways of keeping track of those who owed him favours in return, monetary, political or otherwise. As one report noted, a single Epstein bank account had more than 4,000 listed money transfers, and he had many such accounts in different banks. It is the vast dimensions of the Epstein affair, not just Trump's apparent personal connection, that explains the protracted cover-up before and after Epstein's death. The Biden administration did nothing in 4 years since Epstein's clients no doubt included many prominent Democrats. Hence the nervousness of both the Department of Justice and the corporate media in pursuing the investigation. Trump's lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal, announced Friday, could well be a devastating self-inflicted wound, since it could open him up to deposition testimony about his relations with Epstein, a longtime friend and associate. Epstein received kid glove treatment by the U.S. Attorney for South Florida, Alexander Acosta, later appointed by Trump as his Secretary of Labor. The re-emergence of the Epstein case reveals deep fissures within Trump's supposedly unshakable base, as fascists like Steve Bannon and Alex Jones first denounced Attorney General Pam Bondi, then reversed themselves abruptly at Trump's command. Among the millions who voted for Trump out of anger over the economic hardship brought on by the pro-business policies of the Biden administration, the Epstein affair only deepens their disgust with all of capitalist politics. These shifts demonstrate how false the corporate media and Democratic Party narrative of Trump's political invincibility is. The truth is that Trump is widely hated and that tens of millions despise his policies, particularly in persecuting immigrants and attacking democratic rights and social benefits. They have made their feelings known in some of the largest protests in American history. The most recent public opinion poll records his approval rating at just 42%. Trump only appears strong in comparison to the political eunuchs in the Democratic Party, whose cowardice enrages those who wish to fight back against Trump and fascism. The mass anti-Trump sentiment finds no expression within the Democratic Party. On the contrary, the Democratic Party and the trade unions and pseudo-left political figures who prop it up are Trump's main line of defense. There is another similarity between the Stavisky and Profumo affairs and the current scandal over Jeffrey Epstein. All of them were or are connected with deepening social tensions, simmering just beneath the surface and soon to erupt in the class battles of the 1930s, the mass radicalization of the 1960s, and now the political explosions which are on the agenda in the second half of the 2020s. Driving these struggles are far more profound issues than the corruption of Trump and the entire ruling elite, however much that provokes mass outrage. Inflation continues to tear at the living standards of the masses, even as social infrastructure is systematically smashed up by budget cuts and mass layoffs in Washington. For the vast majority, conditions of life have become increasingly impossible. Trump exploited illusions and discontent to return to power in the 2024 elections with the indispensable assistance of the Democrats. But sooner or later, like any con man, the day of reckoning comes. Now he seeks to ride out the crisis while seeking support among his opponents in the ruling elite through foreign policy initiatives like resuming arms shipments to Ukraine. The working class cannot simply sit back and allow the crisis to develop. This would mean allowing the ruling class to sort things out in a way that meets their interests, with or without Trump. That is the road offered by the Democratic Party and its allies and apologists. The critical first step is to develop the class struggle and make it the basis for the independent intervention of the working class into political life. This means breaking out of the straitjacket of the unions through the building of rank-and-file workplace and neighbourhood committees that will take up the immediate tasks of defence of the democratic rights and economic interests of working people. The development of a class struggle must be connected to an international political struggle for socialism. If Trump is the embodiment of the criminal oligarchy, the face of the political underworld now in power, the mass opposition from below is the face of the future. The coming mass struggles of the working class against the financial aristocracy and its defenders. Victory in these struggles requires the development of a conscious revolutionary leadership of the working class, the Socialist Equality Party. After massacring Gaza aid seekers, Israel escalates bloodshed with assault on Deir al-Balah. Alex Lantier, July 21, 2025. The Zionist regime responded to international outrage over its cold-blooded massacre Sunday of 92 Palestinians seeking aid in Gaza by escalating mass murder and starvation of the population. Gaza's health ministry reported that at least 130 Palestinians were killed Monday and over 1,000 wounded across Gaza as Israeli troops assaulted the city of Deir al-Balah. Deir al-Balah has been until now the last settlement in Gaza spared bombardment, reportedly because Israeli officials believed Israeli hostages were held there. As a result, it became a centre for Palestinian refugee camps, UN aid operations and the remaining operational water treatment facilities in Gaza. An estimated 80,000 Palestinians were forced to flee Deir al-Balah after the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, issued evacuation orders for several neighborhoods in the city. One Deir al-Balah resident, Thuraya Abu Quinis, told CNN, quote, "The planes came and dropped many leaflets on us. The entire sky was covered with leaflets on the houses, the streets and everywhere, stating that we had to evacuate from certain areas. We are living on edge. We can't sleep, eat or drink. There is no flour, no anything, and we are hungry. We are dying and our children are dying of hunger." End of quote. Yesterday, Israeli tanks and armoured personnel carriers invaded Deir al-Balah, bombarding mosques, civilian homes, and UN and World Health Organization WHO facilities. UN spokesperson Stéphane Dujarric said, quote, "UN staff remain in Deir al-Balah and two UN guest houses have been struck. despite parties having been informed of the locations of UN premises. These locations, as with all civilian sites, must be protected regardless of evacuation orders, end of quote. IDF forces attacked the WHO staff residence and main warehouse in Deir al-Balah 3 times, bombing and setting them aflame, and detaining 2 WHO staff and their relatives. Quote, Israeli military entered the premises, forcing women and children to evacuate on foot towards al-Mawasi amid active conflict. Male staff and family members were handcuffed, stripped, interrogated on the spot, and screened at gunpoint. WHO Director Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus tweeted, adding, quote, WHO demands the immediate release of the detained staff and protection of all its staff, end of quote. The IDF reported that one soldier, Staff Sergeant Amit Cohen, 19, had been killed and another wounded by a detonation of Israeli munitions in the Deir al-Balah area. The Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, also reported that their fighters had damaged an Israeli Merkava tank by detonating a, quote, powerful landmine directly under the tank as it advanced. The IDF attack on Deir al-Balah is part of a systematic policy of genocide by denying food, water, electricity, and medical treatment to the Palestinian population. Starvation is rapidly spreading in Gaza, with at least 19 people having confirmed to have starved to death in Gaza since Saturday. In the meantime, fully stocked UN food aid warehouses across the border in Egypt contain enough to feed Gaza for 3 months, but food shipments are blocked by the IDF. Medical personnel, hospitals and healthcare facilities remain a particular target of IDF forces operating with undisguised contempt for international law. In a statement Sunday, the British charity organisation Medical Aid for Palestinians, MAP, noted that Israeli evacuation orders, quote, endanger vital humanitarian and primary healthcare sites and are accelerating the systematic dismantling of Gaza's already decimated healthcare system, end of quote. Gaza Health Ministry officials said hospitals are running out of fuel, food and medicine, risking a collapse of medical care. Spokesperson Khalil al-Dekwan said medical staff only get 1 meal a day and that hospitals are overrun with patients suffering from exhaustion and malnutrition. Yesterday, Israeli commandos south of the city of Khan Yunus kidnapped Dr. Marwan al-Hams, the head of Gaza's field hospitals, killing a journalist and wounding another near a Red Cross facility. The Israeli genocide in Gaza is a crime against humanity, unfolding thanks to the unstinting support of the major imperialist powers. The United States, Germany, Britain, France, and Spain have all sent material shipments to Israel to arm the Zionist regime to commit genocide. As they try to push through a neo-colonial conquest of the Middle East, they see the genocidal Zionist regime, in the debased words of German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, as, quote, doing their, quote, dirty work for them. The IDF's ceaseless resort to atrocities and the mass murder of defenseless civilians, as in calls by top Israeli officials and US President Donald Trump to murder or expel all Palestinians from Gaza, unmistakably recalls the crimes of the Nazis. Yesterday, Gideon Levy, a columnist for Israel's Haaretz paper, told Al Jazeera, quote, there's now a very systemic destruction project of whole towns and villages, one after the other. Israel is doing things that the Germans did in the early years of the Third Reich, which Israelis don't see any similarity. I must remind all of us, the extermination of the Jews in the Holocaust started with evacuating people to the east of Europe. Same plan. That's the first stage. We should stop it here. Stopping the Gaza genocide requires, however, the building of an international movement against the imperialist governments in the working class. Isolated strikes have broken out against weapons shipments to Israel in US or European ports and airports. However, halting the flow of arms to Israel altogether requires fusing such strikes together in an international movement in the working class, directed not only against the Zionist regime, but above all against its imperialist backers and their neo-colonial wars in the Middle East. Workers and youth must reject the illusion that pressure and moral appeals upon imperialist governments, whose hands are drenched in blood, can persuade them to oppose genocide. In reality, these governments have supported the genocide, while sometimes cynically issuing tepid criticisms of Israel for the nearly 2 years the genocide has unfolded. These cynical statements include the two-faced declaration issued yesterday by 25 countries, including Britain, France, Italy, Spain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Japan, criticizing inhumane killing of civilians in Gaza and declaring that it is horrifying that over 800 Palestinians have been killed while seeking aid. It issued an impotent appeal that, quote, Israel must comply with his obligations under international humanitarian law, end of quote. No less horrific than the Israeli regime's genocidal policy, however, is the blood-stained cynicism of imperialist governments that arm Israel for the very same genocide they claim to oppose. This cynicism was epitomized by the posturing British Foreign Secretary David Lammy, who said, quote, "The Israeli government must answer. What possible military justification can there be for strikes that have killed desperate, starving children? What immediate actions are they taking to stop this litany of horrors, and what will they do to hold those responsible to account?" End of quote. But the far-right Israeli regime will not answer Lammy. It will press ahead with its genocide, expecting that it will retain not only the explicit support of Washington and Berlin, but the tacit support of the imperialist powers that signed this cynical document. Of these powers, one could ask, what is their justification for arming Israel as it kills desperate, starving children? What actions can be taken to stop their transfer to Israel of weapon systems that make this litany of horrors possible? And what can be done to hold figures like Lammy responsible for their complicity in genocide? The decisive question is building an international movement in the working class, independent of and opposed to all of the capitalist governments and their petty bourgeois supporters, against imperialist war, fascism and genocide, and for socialism. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez doubles down on support for Israel's, quote, defensive genocide in Gaza. Jacob Cross, July the 21st, 2025. Over 20 months into Israel's extermination operation in Gaza, carried out with the full backing of the US government and its imperialist allies, the US House of Representatives on July 17 voted 442-6 to overwhelmingly reject an amendment to the 2026 US war budget that would have stripped a paltry $500 million from the Israeli cooperative programs. Only 6 members of the House voted in favor of the resolution. The 4 Democrats were Al Green of Texas, Summer Lee of Pennsylvania, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan. The 2 Republicans were Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Thomas Massie of Kentucky. One of the hundreds of lawmakers who opposed the amendment to the war budget was Democratic Socialist of America member and New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The, quote, cooperative programs that Ocasio-Cortez refused to vote to defund are part of the massive U.S. military budget and provide additional funding for advanced Israeli anti-missile systems. After the failure of the amendment early Friday morning on July 18, the House passed the 2026 war budget in a 221-209 vote. The bill advocates over $832 billion to the military and was supported by 5 Democrats along with almost every Republican. One of the 5 Democrats was Maine Congressman Jared Golden, a CIA Democrat Ocasio-Cortez effusively praised in an interview with the New York Times earlier this year. The amendment to the 2026 Department of Defense Appropriations Act was introduced by fascist Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene in response to the July 11 Israeli strike on Gaza's Holy Family Catholic Church, which killed at least 3 people, including the parish priest. That same day, Gaza health officials reported receiving 94 bodies at local hospitals. Unsurprisingly, Ocasio-Cortez's refusal to back the amendment has provoked widespread anger on social media from some of her supporters and tens of thousands of others outraged over the ongoing genocide in Gaza and the Democratic Party's unwavering support for it. In response to growing outrage, on July 19, Ocasio-Cortez defended herself by explicitly reaffirming her support for funding the Israeli military. In a statement on X viewed over 15 million times and met with tens of thousands of angry replies, the DSA Democrat wrote, quote, "Green's amendment does nothing to cut off offensive aid to Israel or end the flow of US munitions being used in Gaza. Of course I voted against it. What it does do is cut off defensive Iron Dome capacities while allowing the actual bombs killing Palestinians to continue," end of quote. In other words, Ocasio-Cortez is again stopping the flow of so-called, quote, defensive weapons to a state that the International Court of Justice, the United Nations and several human rights organizations around the world have accused of carrying out a genocide. In reality, there is no meaningful distinction between offensive and defensive weaponry in the genocide in Gaza. All weapons provided to Israel serve the predatory aims of Washington. Even setting aside the fact that interceptor missiles can be converted into strike weapons, the very existence of the Iron Dome and other anti-missile systems has enabled Israel to bomb with virtual impunity in Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Iran, and Gaza this year alone. Ocasio-Cortez's refusal to back the resolution exposes not only a personal failing, but also the futility of all politics aimed at reforming the Democratic Party and, by extension, the capitalist system. More than a century after the horrors of World War I and the collapse of national reformist programs, the DSA and similar pseudo-left organizations continue to promote the reactionary fantasy that capitalism and its parties can be reformed to serve the interests of the working class. New heading, a left face for the establishment and war. First elected in 2018 on the slogan of, quote, taking on the establishment, Ocasio-Cortez has quickly become one of its most reliable defenders. Her recent vote is not the first time she has walked back even token opposition to the genocide in Gaza while affirming her support for Israeli military systems. In the first month of the slaughter, the New York representative joined Zionists and the entire US political establishment in demanding that anti-genocide protests be, quote, shut down, denouncing them as anti-Semitic. She followed this with an October 2023 interview on CNN in which she declared that funding the Iron Dome was, quote, absolutely legitimate. In the same interview, she stated that, quote, Hamas needs to be dealt with and did not question the mass displacement and ethnic cleansing of 1 million Palestinians from Gaza. Instead, she said only that, quote, partners in the region would, quote, step up to support the forced relocation of Palestinians. As the US-backed Israeli onslaught claimed the lives of tens of thousands of people, the majority of them women and children, Ocasio-Cortez in 2024 was tapped to serve as Genocide Joe Biden's lead campaign surrogate for the presidential election. Taking on the assignment with enthusiasm, she hit the podcast circuit urging workers and students to, quote, be adults and vote for Biden. Despite the best efforts of Ocasio-Cortez and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, the phony leftists were unable to keep Biden's re-election prospects alive. Once Biden was replaced by his partner in crime, Kamala Harris, another loyal servant of US imperialism and supporter of the genocide in Gaza, Ocasio-Cortez was again deployed by the Democratic Party to give a, quote, left gloss to the thoroughly right-wing and pro-genocide candidacy of Harris and the Democratic Party as a whole. In a shameless lie before the Democratic National Convention last year, Ocasio-Cortez declared that Harris, quote, is working tirelessly to secure a ceasefire in Gaza and bringing hostages home, end of quote. In reality, the Biden-Harris administration provided Israel with all the political, economic, and military support required to carry out its ethnic cleansing campaign. Following Harris's electoral defeat, Ocasio-Cortez urged her followers to reject sectarianism, in other words, not to break with the Democratic Party, while blaming, quote, white people and specifically white men for Harris's loss. Harris's embrace of Wall Street, Trump's border wall, and her pledges to continue supporting Israel and the US-NATO war against Russia in Ukraine were not among the reasons Ocasio-Cortez offered for the defeat. New heading, the DSA responds. Ocasio-Cortez's statement reaffirming her support for the Israeli military has provoked a crisis within the DSA itself. In a statement published on July 19, the organization said it opposed her vote against Green's amendment and was, quote, deeply disappointed by her clarifying statement on her position on the Iron Dome, end of quote. Notably, the statement did not call for Ocasio-Cortez to be expelled from the organization. How one can claim to be a, quote, democratic socialist while opposing efforts to block military funding to a state carrying out genocide was also left unexplained. The DSA presented Ocasio-Cortez's actions as if they were somehow contrary to the politics of the DSA itself. In fact, the DSA is a faction of the Democratic Party, and its politics are the politics of the Democratic Party. Support for Israel in particular goes back to the origins of the DSA in the right-wing Zionist politics of its founder, Michael Harrington. Quote, first, the US should support Israel with the necessities for defending itself, Harrington said in 1975 as a leader of the Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee, the predecessor to the DSA. Second, the US does have a peacekeeping role, end of quote. Such words could be spoken, indeed are spoken, by Ocasio-Cortez 50 years later. In the intervening half century, the political establishment has shifted violently to the right, and the DSA with it. It seeks to cover itself with left phrases, and thus felt obliged to issue a pro forma criticism of Ocasio-Cortez's vote. But this is just for show. In terms of class interests, the DSA represents the privileged section of the upper middle class, thoroughly hostile to the independent mobilization of the working class against imperialist war and capitalism. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.